Oh, that would be Frank and Kathy, I think.
Who's that lounging in my chair?
That's Kathy Hine.
Hi.
I'm Frank Fontana. Welcome to the show, folks. A little bit after 1 o'clock. Well, a lot after 1 o'clock. 1:10-ish.
Uh-huh.
And you're back.
Yes.
How was your, for those who don't know, Kathy wasn't here with us last Sunday.
No, it was one of those trips I took a daughter to look at a college. So, University of Arizona in Tucson.
Beautiful there.
I'm all for going to Tucson this time of year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she wants to get in the dance program there. So, she was doing her thing, and there's mountains around, so I decided to attempt to climb. Now, mountain, I should say hill. It was paved.
I've been there before. You said, is it Tucson, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been to Tucson. Beautiful. And there is some high mountains, though.
Oh, well, I didn't climb those. No, I climbed the ones that was paved. Again, it was like Turmeric Hill or something. I can't remember. But there, it was paved, and there were women in strollers passing me. There were people in
just
their
80s. Just because you were like taking it all in.
Passing me. Yeah. I'm trying to get my cardio back. I'm trying to get my wind back.
Sure.
And so I just moseyed and enjoyed the walk up. But I didn't realize in my app, in my phone, I have that heart app, and it tells you how many steps you took. And apparently I climbed 70 flights.
What was did you monitor your heart rate the whole time?
No. But my heart beating out of my chest was monitoring. So I didn't need a phone.
So you're able to talk? Did you have like a, because they say like you have to do it, if you really want to get a benefit out of that kind of exercise, you got to be able to push yourself to the point where you're like almost can't hold a conversation.
No, I couldn't hold a conversation. Okay. Fortunately, I was by myself, so that was a non-issue, but my heart was racing so much because I'm not used to cardio and climbing that they have little things you can stop along the way to read about some of the nature in the area.
So you acted interested?
Yes. I pretended like I was taking pictures. I'm like, oh, and look at celebrity trainer Jim comes in and I'm like talking about not being able to
breathe.
Breathing
heavy. Yeah. Jim Karras is joining us. real quick, before we get into our guests, as you can see, Kathy Hart is back. And she, you know, I did, before we move on, Kathy, I just wanted to, did your daughter learn all her dance skills from you?
Oh, God, no. No. I have zero rhythm.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Elaine Seinfeld? That's
you.
Me.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to know that.
That's
just
absolutely
want to clear
me.
It up there, just in case anybody out there thought about that.
Nothing.
Like I did. Coming up on the show, folks, today, we're here from 1 to 3 o'clock. Celebrity trainer who just walked in the studio, Jim Karras, is joining us. Also in studio, therapist Dr. Jessica Pryor is here. And we're both going to focus on the topic of staying fit, how to combat mental illness with physical activity, as well as body image. You know, it's such a big deal, and the internet and social media is making it way bigger because everyone is so vain, right? Are you vain on social?
No, I try not to be. Like, I try to post, my friend and I try to out-ugly each other when we Snapchat each other.
Other side of it, yeah.
So thank God only we can see it. But no, we wake up first thing in the morning and it's like, okay, who's uglier?
No
it's
makeup.
Not necessarily
selfies,
ugly, but it's like our hair. Like, you don't have to, you have the best hair ever. So
thank
this
you.
Is an issue.
I wake up like this.
You suck. Yeah. So for those women that have hair that's just crazy and not cooperative, yeah, we'd try.
That's your opportunity to take a good
selfie.
We
take a picture and it's like, mine's worse.
Good for you. And so for the rest of the world, who will address this too, it's all about the body image and how I think social media is perpetuating the idea that everyone has to be this perfect image, perfect body, and you know, post it for the world to judge.
For sure.
So we're going to talk about that. Dr. John Duffy is joining us to talk about sex, your favorite topic.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, who doesn't want to talk about it? Maybe I don't know,
but it's not really sex.
Can you
in
tell
the
I'm already awkward?
She's turning red.
It?
If you can't see, well, you can go online and see it folks. WGNradio.com/watch or listen if you're trying to catch us online. But it's not sex in the dirty way. We're talking about how to have that conversation with your children. Right?
That.
You got kids in that age bracket, and I don't want to hear it now, but I do want to hear how you approached it.
And I actually have a pretty funny story about
good.
That. Yeah.
I want to hear that. And then later on the show, Master Chef Elliot Callahan is going to be joining us, and this is where our sex six-packs and chocolate. So Jim represents the six-pack.
Yep.
You know, we got chocolate coming up after that. So he's going to give us some, you know, what to do in the holidays with some chocolate, some different ways to use chocolate.
And he's a master chef.
Yes.
With chocolate.
Yes, so you know it's going to be epic.
Dream job.
Dream job. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to jump right into the show as soon as we come back. Oh, this is my favorite song.
I can just see you dancing to that.
I had my headband on.
Lonely nights.
My tight spandex. glistening in sweat.
Shirt's good look for you, Frank.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It was. All the ladies loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Frank Fontana. That's Kathy Hart. Joining us in studio, Jim Karas is here to talk about fitness in a different kind of way. But Jim, before we get into it, you got a little heated in our ending of our conversation about social media and the influence that it does on people's self-image.
I think there is a terrible disservice that is done to both men and women. I mean, the biggest incidence of bulimia and anorexia now is men, more so than women, because they're getting body shamed the way everyone else is. But I'm very disappointed in a person who I wrote for her magazine for many years. I spoke at many of her conferences, and that's our Miss Oprah Winfrey.
Whoa.
I mean, who photoshopped and airbrushed back in the day her pictures more than she does on her covers? And I think she's done so many positive things for people with so many emotional things she's shared and she's brought out. But when it comes to the body image thing, you know, Miss Winfrey, you got to really turn it around here, because the whole Weight Watchers thing, you know, she's overweight. One week she says, I'm happy with my weight. The next minute she's not. The next minute she's this. It's like, stop. Because women are all saying to me, and I've been a trainer for 31 years, if Oprah has a chef and a trainer and can't lose weight, how can I? And I always say the exact same thing, everyone. It's because she doesn't want to.
Mm-hmm. You have to put the effort in.
You have to, and you have to wake up, look in the mirror and say, you know, I want to make a change. We were chatting with Jessica, who's going to be on in a moment, about perfectionism. Why don't I get better? Why don't I do just a little something better for my body? Sleep 15 minutes more, drink an extra glass of water, take a walk for 15 minutes. Simple habits that you can then parlay and make huge changes over time. So I've said this for many years to Oprah, and I've gotten a lot of trouble, and I don't care. Please lead
us. You've said this to Oprah?
I have not said it to her. I've said it very loudly on numerous television and radio shows and articles. Oh, yeah, she doesn't like me. Oh, no. She won't introduce me at the at her things that I used to speak at. At RL, we fight for the same table here in Chicago. Table 68, and when I'm on the other side, she will not say hi. So I literally nod like hi, and she will not acknowledge me.
Jim, the very first thing I thought of is, because it seems like when you're on a cover, now it's her magazine.
Of course.
So I have to believe she has final say.
Oh, of course. She says she has final say.
But she also wants to look really good and present this image. So it seems like it's a pretty tough balance of, what do I do? Do I look my absolute best with photoshopping and sell more magazines? Not to say that that's the reason she's doing it, is to sell more magazines, but to look her best. And it is a society where you're faced with, where do I get the courage to do that?
I would say $2 billion could help most people get the courage to do that.
I think so.
Yeah. So at this point, when we're all struggling, we've all started out, we've all done things, but the lenses and the cameras and the way you can reduce your size. I'll see people I know at the same party I was at. I'll see their Instagram the next day. I'm like, who's that? That's so-and-so. They took 50 pounds off of their picture. And then I hate in the media when you have a celebrity and they tell this at Vanity Fair. They tell the writers. They tell the celebrities. Eat a burger and fries when you're interviewed by the Vanity Fair person for the cover story, because they're swizzle sticks. And they say things like, oh, Cameron Diaz is eating a burger and fries. No, she's not. You can't stay that size and eat a burger and fries. Yeah. That is never true. So again, all of our young people are influenced by these beliefs that, why can't I eat like these thin people can? Mm-hmm. Why can't I look as good as these people do in their pictures? It's because they don't.
Well, Jim, I can imagine, you know, if I'm Weight Watchers and I'm a top executive, Oprah to me is the perfect spokesperson, because she's never gonna be fully thin.
Correct.
She, like as you say, she doesn't want to be technically.
No. Nope.
So,
well, there's some people, they just, their body will not be, she'll never be 110 pounds.
It would be unhealthy. Let me be very clear. That would not be healthy for her. Do you know what the average person on Weight Watchers loses on a weekly basis? Quarter of a pound.
Quarter of a pound.
But
which is to my point of that, Oprah perpetuates the idea of, it's like, you know, smoking. I want somebody who's going to continue to smoke and push that advocacy, like Oprah is continuing to maintain her weight, although she has a message and a voice and all that stuff.
Correct.
She's the perfect person, because she will always be right there with that weight. And she's, you know what I mean?
And she's relatable, Frank.
It's relatable.
You can relate to her. Absolutely.
Relatable.
So
I think what Oprah deals with also is the emotions behind the constant struggle with your weight.
Yes.
Does she ever want to get to that perfect dream weight? I don't know. I can't answer that. I'm not her. But it's a constant struggle with, why are you eating the things you're not supposed to eat? Why are you beating moderation? Well, there's so many different things that are involved in weight loss.
This is a perfect opportunity for therapist Dr. Jessica Pryor to chime in. She's sitting in studio with us. She's with the Family Institute. Jessica, why don't you slide over to this mic over here?
Okay.
And give us your two cents on the topic, because this is your world that you play in.
Yeah, so you're a therapist with the Family Institute, and I did a little bit of research on you, and you can basically talk about anything as you're trying to get your headphones
on. Headphones are on back.
You probably don't even need headphones on right now.
Perfectly. You can get started
Hold
without
on.
Them.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you.
So you're dealing with a lot of perfectionism with millennials.
Yes.
Right now, that seems to be a topic.
Yes. So I am a psychologist at the Family Institute at Northwestern University, and my position has three roles. So I'm a full-time faculty member to our Master of Arts Counseling students. I'm also the lead of a perfectionism research lab with some pretty outstanding graduate students. And finally, I am also a practicing clinical psychologist here in Illinois, and I work often with perfectionistic students, sure, athletes, absolutely, but also people who are in high-achieving, pretty high-benchmark careers.
So what would you say to people that, I don't know if any teenagers are listening, but what would you say to parents of teenagers that are dealing with this perfectionism on social media? What advice can we give our kids to stop trying to be so perfect?
I love this question. I am campaigning a major initiative at Northwestern this week, #PerfectlyImperfect. And you. Mm. And we were talking in the green room around good enough expectations.
It works with your wife, too, by the way.
Yeah.
I use that hashtag all the time to my wife.
Good enough?
No, perfectly imperfect.
Oh, I was going to say.
Okay. Let's a couple things slide.
So normalizing good enough. And I think parents with best of intentions, certainly coaches as well, really encourage people to do the best, be 99th percentile. And statistically, we can't all do that. And so helping people have good enough expectations is really key.
Hey, Kathy, you know what I'm thinking here? We got to take a break. And we have Dr. Duffy who's standing by. What if we brought the minds together?
Whoa.
And had a panel discussion on this and keep this going for a little bit, because the text lines are heating up.
Can you guys stay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
Okay. Are you cool with that?
I have a date with the gym, so I can push my date back.
All right.
Of course you do.
Folks,
okay.
We want you guys to chime in on the subject because the text lines are heating up. 312-981-7200. I know this is a hot button topic for a lot of people. We'd love to hear all sides of the fence on this. 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Oh, so pretty. I feel pretty and witty.
You did it, Tom.
Wow.
That was a last-minute request. I feel pretty.
Yeah, you like 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Let's come back in with I Feel Pretty.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's apropos for the conversation.
Good
here.
Job.
Joining Kathy and I in studio is celebrity trainer Jim Karras. We have therapist Dr. Jessica Pryor from the Family Institute and Dr. John Duffy, regular here on WGN. You hear him with Bill and Wendy, as well as other shows on the network. He's got a book. He's on all over the place. He's on Pear, this new website and portal for parents. I love it.
That's great.
Thanks, John, for coming in. So, Kath, we left off with the subject of self-image on social media.
Yeah, because with as a mother of a teenage daughter, and she had actually spoken to me this week, but somebody came into her school and talked to her about social media and perfectionism, and she came home all charged up. Those stupid Kardashians, I can't believe that they're making a living off blah, blah. And she was really upset, and she was really charged up by the whole thing. But then, like 10 minutes later, of course, she posted a picture, whatever. So, so it's easy to get all charged up about the subject and agree that social media is going too far with perfectionism and putting way too much pressure on our kids to be perfect. So how do we help our kids navigate that?
Mm-hmm. Who wants to? You want John?
Well, I'll start with this one. Yeah, because, you know, most kids now grew up with social media. And so a big component of their self-esteem is that part of their identity. So we can lecture them and say, hey, you know, you do not need to be perfect. You don't need to post anything perfect up there. But number of likes and that being part of their identity suggests something very, very different. So as parents, instead of lecturing our kids about what their identity ought to be comprised of, we need to do a lot more listening about why it comes from social media. What does it mean to them? And if you can get down to the meaning, you can usually find some degree of balance. Not that social media is not going to influence them, mm-hmm. because it is. It will for the rest of
it's
their
inevitable,
lives.
Right.
It's inevitable. But you want to
create some balance, and you want your voice in the mix, where you were saying, like, you don't have to be perfect, you know, you don't have to present perfect. You can even present something ridiculous or hideous on social media, and maybe that will have an impact on somebody else that they don't need to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing more and more of that, aren't we?
I would add that I think a really important component is helping children, helping all of us understand that social media presence or physical appearance is one aspect of our self-worth, but it is not the entirety of. And so a lot of the individuals I work with, a lot of perfectionism research shows that people get really, really distressed, self-critical, eating disorders come up, depression, anxiety, when my entire self-worth is based on these few marks of success.
Absolutely. You see it in adults, you see it in kids. I know people and friends like this where their entire week is just done if they step on a scale and they're 4 pounds over the weight
they want to be. Which they should do same time, same day, every day.
So you're a big
proponent. You should get on the scale every single day. Yes. Get the reality. Get your blood work done every 6 months. Get on the scale. I mean, get your data. This is at your fingertips. Utilize it. If you're gaining weight, it means you're overfueling. You're over-energizing your body.
If you get on the scale every day, I mean, doesn't it fluctuate?
Sure.
Is that going to mess with your head?
No, because you learn the patterns. You learn to understand there is going to be fluctuation, and therefore that becomes your reality.
Jim, this is super important because a lot of people do what you say. They get on the scale every day, and then they freak out when it's 3 pounds over, 3 pounds. Then they're thrilled when it's 3 pounds under, and they have a great couple days, and then they eat something, and they step on it the next day, and then they're shattered.
Correct.
So you got to explain this further. Folks, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You could text or call that same number. We got a panel of amazing experts here to help you with any questions, or if you're dealing with these issues, now is the time to talk about it. So let's talk about it, all right? The scale. To me, I like what you're saying, and I've done it when I've been on strict programs, but on my day-to-day, I'm one of those guys that does get a little affected by it.
You said a bad word, Frank. You said strict. So when you go on those rigid, crazy, no carb, no this, no that, no white at night, no all of this, no. I hate the word no when it comes to any type of diet program. I don't even like the word diet. It's total deprivation.
Mental deprivation,
what you want to do with your body is just like a baby. Think for a moment what a happy baby does. It sleeps, it eats, it poops, it burps, it plays, it sleeps, it eats, it poops.
They have a life, don't they?
Perfect. That's what we're supposed to do as adults.
And
we're supposed to eat at the same time. We're supposed to eat at the same time every day. We're supposed to sleep within the same half an hour every day. If you get into a healthy habit, healthy patterns, that scale is going to stop all that wild swinging back and forth. Sure, there's going to be 2 or 3 pounds that are going to go up and down at different times, but you're not going to notice those huge, devastating fluctuations yourself up on.
That's what I want you to talk about is what is normal fluctuation
two
for
to three
people
pounds.
Who don't get, so three, 2 to 3 pounds.
Absolutely.
2 to 3 pounds. So
absolutely.
Don't sweat over that.
No. And you know, when you backtrack into what you ate the day before, I had sushi, lots of soy sauce, I'm dehydrated, therefore I'm bloated, therefore I'm carrying water weight. That's what this is coming from. I'm not up 2 pounds of fat, 3 pounds of fat. You can't do that in a day. That is your water fluctuation. Your body's huge amount percentage
water. I do think a lot of people don't realize how bad they eat. I have a friend that she thinks she eats healthy.
I know.
She does it. I'm like, okay, keep a journal, keep a record of everything you eat. And it's like, whoa, okay. I thought I was eating healthy, and I'm really not.
Here's the problem, Kathy, with the word healthy. Healthy doesn't mean weight loss. Healthy can mean, yes, I'm eating more green vegetables. Yes, I'm eating more lean protein. Yes, I'm making better choices. Doesn't mean you're creating a caloric deficiency that's going to facilitate weight and fat loss. Yeah. That's the problem with that. Healthy is fine, but it doesn't mean weight loss.
Yeah.
Now, John, you see a lot of kids coming into your practice.
I do.
Who may suffer from obesity and struggle with the mental side of that. Are you focusing on the stuff that Jim's talking about?
The line I draw here, and it might be threading a needle a little bit, is the idea of kind of emotional wellness versus emotional brittleness. So I think if somebody is emotionally pretty strong and healthy, I think that data can fuel them in kind of a coaching type way. I think if somebody is super suggestible and their self-worth is malleable, overly malleable, I think those numbers can play a negative number.
I don't disagree with you. Right.
Yeah. But for healthy people, I do think you want to use the data. And to your point, Kathy, like sometimes we think we're doing absolutely the right thing. This happens not just in eating, but in a lot of habits in our lives. And we find out when we really examine it, I'm not getting enough sleep. I'm not eating properly. I'm not studying enough. Whatever it is, you might not, you might recognize once on reflection that, these habits really aren't working for me.
So who wants to answer the question of emotion when it comes to diets? Because a lot of people are on diets, and I heard someone say, until you deal with the emotions going on in your life, whether it's from childhood that still haunt you or affect you to this day, or a current relationship emotional issue that you're going through, you are not going to lose the weight no matter what diet you go. You have to deal with your emotions. Mm-hmm. Who wants that one?
Jessica, you take it.
I'm happy to take it. So as a perfectionism psychologist, I work a lot with individuals who have perfectionistic tendencies across all domains of life, especially relationship with body. And one of the key components to that, that most of us know, I think all of us on the panel might agree, that relationship with body, relationship with body image is often not about food. And it's often not about fat. It's about some of those other messages.
Yeah, because when I'm not happy with the world, I eat cheese fries and I don't care.
she smashes them all over the face. Cheese fries, facials.
Like life, yeah, life get stress, and yes, it's like when you can't have like a glass of Pinot, and yes, it's like, okay, I feel like I need something to just make me feel better.
Jessica and I were talking about this in the green room. I have a famous client who's a writer who says Haagen-Dazs never lets me down. Yeah. So at night when she's stressed, it's a go-to food, and she for that reason.
We got to take a quick break. This is a fascinating conversation. I do want to get to some of the calls and some of the texts that are coming in. 312-981-7200. Folks, if you have a question to any one of our panelists here, we'd be happy to talk to you. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, folks. Frank and Kathy here. We're talking about healthy body image, working out, and the impact of social media, how it all plays in.
Yeah, I feel like we could talk a really long time about this. And I do, you said we were taking calls and texts. I do want to address the text that the person said that this conversation is oddly triggering. Yes. I have an eating disorder that stems in part from how much I hate my body. And first of all, my heart goes out to you because totally, we are just, we're body image obsessed. And it's, people look at me and they're like, oh, you're so thin. And I'm like, okay, A, I have a dimple in my ass that won't go away, and I have like fat under my butt cheeks that nice, won't go away. So thin people can be unhealthy, and there are so many people that I don't think Heidi Klum or I don't think perfect models feel like they're perfect. I think everybody feels like they have something to complain about with their body.
And as you were talking about taking an ugly selfie earlier, that goes to the point of flaunting flaws, talking about them as normative. And often in our culture, we have this message that we need to do that at that perfect level. And that's what we produce. Those are the messages we imbibe. And so by embracing hashtag perfectly imperfect, Northwestern this week, we're going to be focusing intensely on normalization of imperfection. And that has, that does wonders for those of us who struggle with eating disorders and body image, for others to come out and be really transparent around their imperfection, rather than continuing as I talked with a lot of my clients, emphasize the illusion of perfect.
So, Jim, we're going to be wrapping up here, moving on. Dr. Duffy, you're going to be hanging with us because we're going to switch topics here. Closing statement here. Got a lot of people. Unfortunately, we can't get to all of them, but generally wanting, you know, more health and food related questions answered. How can people get a hold of you, and what's your kind of final thought on this?
Sure. My website is jimkaras.com, JIMKARAS as in Sam.com. I answer all my emails, so if you email me, I will get back to you. Final thought is, pick one habit that you're struggling with the most. Is it sleep? Is it water consumption? Is it food? And here's the greatest thing I'm going to tell you in 5 seconds. Intermittent fasting. Just don't eat dinner. So if you don't want to eat healthy food, eat breakfast, eat lunch, or don't eat breakfast and don't eat lunch. I mean, I used to really go after people who wanted to skip meals. The research on intermittent fasting and what it does to your body is off the charts.
I'm reading more and more about that. But so explain it. It's 12 hours?
It's 18 to 24. Personally, I can do 18. I cannot do 24. On Mondays, I eat breakfast at 6, I eat lunch at noon, and I don't eat again until on Tuesday at 6.
So nothing but water.
Water and tea. I'm a big tea drinker. Tea is the fountain of youth.
Okay, good. Fabulous.
And do you like stock up on that lunch? Is it a big,
hearty lunch? Absolutely, Frank. Oh, yeah. Big salad. 6, 8, 10 ounces of grilled chicken or fish. Absolutely. It is a big breakfast and a big lunch.
Okay.
And then just shut it down. So it's an easy way. If you love to eat crap, sorry, said crap on the air, and you know, you don't want to eat vegetables, then just stop eating. That's right. That was worse. Okay.
And all right, let's move on. Dr. Jessica Pryor, I do want to address one quick text that came in, and this is probably perfect for you. How do I find a therapist to help me with my body image?
Great. I was just going to say, one of the best tips I can give is connecting with a therapist. There's no shame in that, and many of us go to therapists for a lot of different reasons, including this struggle with this myth and illusion of perfectionism. So there are a couple great websites online. One is the place I work, the Family Institute at Northwestern University. It's www.family-institute.org, and you can find a therapist there. There's also goodtherapy.org, and psychologytoday.com has a therapist directory. You can search based on presenting problem, insurance, coverage, etc.
Great. Excellent.
I also think, if I can just add this real quickly, if you are on Instagram or Facebook, find groups that will help you with this. There are Facebook groups that you can find. If you do certain hashtags for body image or, you know, perfectly imperfect, find different hashtags to follow, and you can find an amazing community on social media that will help you with this.
Great.
Yes.
Good point. And John, you want to button this up in terms of the food aspect of things and the mental?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think to the point of both of the texters that you just read about, there are emotional underpinnings to almost everything that we suffer, including food issues, including body image issues. There's a bit in my office that when somebody comes in with a presenting problem, that's hardly ever the problem. And often there's something that happened long ago in your life, and that drives how you feel about yourself, about your body, about food now. And some of that's about control and a whole myriad of other issues. So if you can get to therapy or find a way to identify and understand what drives the way you feel about these things, the better you're going to be at finding solutions quickly.
Excellent point.
Awesome.
Jim, Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Great being here.
We'll definitely we'll have to do this again. I like the whole roundtable deal.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Dr. Duffy, you came in. You're always great about just flying in and talking about whatever's on the table.
Hanging out,
just spending time with us here. But we brought you in on a different premise. And before we actually get to that, Kathy, I would love to touch on the current events going on in the news.
Yeah, it's impossible not to. What happened in Pittsburgh yesterday?
And I didn't see this because I was sleeping, and I read your social feed and came up, and I saw you gave a shout out to, you know, your heart's out to Pittsburgh, and I was like, what's all this? Jumped on, you know, Drudge Report and saw, wow.
Yeah. Craziness. It happened again. And, you know, I try to stay away from talking a lot of politics, and you know, we try to keep it happy and upbeat. But when something like this happens in our society, I think that people want to be heard. And I think that one of the reasons we have so many of these shooters, clearly there's a mental illness problem that needs to be addressed. I have to believe every single one of these people that have done a mass shooting has a mental illness, diagnosed or undiagnosed. And every time I hear them say, oh, he kept to himself, it seems like that we hear that so often with a lot of these mass shooters. It just feels like there's no sense of community. It feels like they want to be heard.
But yet all of them are on social media, oddly enough.
Mm-hmm. Because they want to be heard.
Right.
And I think that they're not being heard. They're not being validated. They're not being loved. They're hurt. They are hurting people. And when people hurt, they hurt other people.
You know, my profession is very reluctant to acknowledge what you're saying. I think in part because it feels like we're kind of saying anybody who suffers from mental illness has this propensity toward violence, which is not the point at all. But I think you're right. Anybody who is drawn toward this kind of act is suffering in some way. And if we can identify the nature of that suffering, then maybe we can eradicate some of this going forward. And I get your point, Frank. Hey, they're on social media, and so there's something going on there. But that is such a thin form of connection, right? Yeah. So, but in terms of like one-to-one direct connection, the eye contact the three of us are making together now, I think these guys, and mostly it's men, have precious little of that connection in their lives. And I think that's what drives an awful lot of what happens here.
And I'm hearing people say, well, what can we do? Oh, get out and vote. And absolutely, get out and vote. I'm not saying to not do that. But what I'm saying is, is anyone else so super skeptical of these politicians because they're fighting with each other instead of
absolutely
helping our country?
Yeah.
And again, I'm not Republican, I'm not Democrat. But when we have, I'm going to get emotional about this. When we have a president of our country disrespecting people and saying what he says about people that don't agree with him and doing that publicly and shaming them, what are we supposed to do? He's the leader of our country. So vote. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm done with politicians. I believe there are good politicians out there with good intentions, but I believe our whole political system is screwed up.
Definitely.
And
is.
Only because I'm on the radio, I didn't say another word. It is screwed up.
John,
and it's going to take a lot to fix it.
I agree 100% with Kathy saying, although I do think there's another party to blame in this because, you know, somebody could speak, but if they don't have a microphone, not too many people are going to hear them.
Right.
And I think who's perpetuating the negativity and the violence and the side taking is the media.
Absolutely.
You cannot go, you know, just blame the president because if nobody paid attention, we wouldn't get that message out. And I don't necessarily hate Trump. I don't hate the Democrats or Republicans. I understand behind the cloth, there's so much more we don't know.
Right.
There's so much other things going on in the world of politics.
So how can we handle situations like this as human beings with leaving politics and media out of it?
Before you answer that, John?
Yeah.
We're going to leave everybody hanging.
Oh,
we do have to take a quick break.
What can we do?
What can we do, folks? We want your opinion. 312-981-7200 is our number. I know this is a hot topic. Let's talk about it. Give us a call. Welcome back to the show, folks. Thanks for tuning in with us here. Kathy Hart's joining me. Dr. John Duffy's in studio. We're here till 3 o'clock talking about a hot topic. You know, the shooting's happening in Pittsburgh. Everyone is just mourning over this. It's a terrible, terrible event. And our hearts go out to everybody up there. And we're just talking about it here and the politics behind it, Kathy.
Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned President Trump and I knew that was going to get, especially on WGN, I know that's going to get people going. And I said, I'm not Republican, I'm not Democrat. But when the leader of our country shames so many people publicly, how is that helping our country? It just seems like it's feeding anger. It's feeding hate. And if we want to take calls about, you know, Obama and Clinton and every politician, every president known to man has said something that has offended someone. The point is, I don't want it to be about politics because politics is not going to fix this. And if we think politics is going to fix what's happening in our society, I think we're wrong. I
agree. And let's talk to Scott, who has an opinion on both sides of the fence. Hey, Scott, thanks for calling the show.
Hi, Scott.
How's it going today? I will automatically admit that I do have conservative values, but I don't let it affect all my thinking. And as far as it goes, I really believe people are reading into the news that they want to read. Mm-hmm. And so whether it be conservative or liberal, and I think it's what's either enraging them or it's what's empowering them to think along the lines I want to think. And so as far as like the shooting, it's just another example of a crazy individual doing just terrible things to society, and it's not right. And I do believe that comes back to a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And we can blame politicians all day, but then mental illness is a whole other thing because it's not just our country. We can't even fix it with just the mental illness conversation because that's so complicated.
No, I think the core of it. Well, Scott, to your point, you know, I think, you know, politics of any kind creates an us versus them mentality, and we do now lean toward this confirmation bias. And you can find a whole channel on TV or groups online that's just support what you believe, mm-hmm. and so you you never really open your mind to other points of view. So I can appreciate your thought that you do. That's important, but I think the core of the problem has to do with connection with other human beings on a micro level, not on this macro political level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's harder because the mandate then becomes our mandate, not, you know, our mandate November 6th, show up, vote, and wash our hands of it, but to reach out to people and connect to them, especially if we feel that they might be disenfranchised in some way, especially if we think this might be the person who is likely to cause some harm to themselves or someone else, you know, and to identify that that looks different than you might think it looks, because it doesn't necessarily look like, you know, anger or something like that. It probably looks more like depression and sadness and isolation.
Scott, can I ask you a question? Well, I'm going to anyway. So, do you know your neighbors?
I do.
Do you know
them? I do know my neighbors.
Oh, so do you know them well?
I would say I know them well, but I don't, you know enough to say hi to them in passing.
And you say hi, okay. Because one of the things I think about is when they talked about this guy, he kept to himself. And how many times do we hear that? He kept to himself.
Every story is that.
And so, and I feel like, Dr. Duffy, maybe you can talk about this, is how much of it is when we see someone, he kept to himself. Should we take responsibility for that? Because we as neighbors are not communicating. We're not connecting. You talk about disconnect. Is that, yes, we can go out and vote, we can do whatever, but right now, today, can we make friends with our neighbors? Can we make friends with people that we see might be hurting? If we see someone that has a mental illness, can we just connect with them?
Can I interrupt them?
Sure, go ahead.
Is it the reason why people are so isolated themselves? Is it because they have so much anger and hatred and they're just holding it in and finally they reach the point of when they break, and then that's when you have these mass shootings? And I think that is the outcome of what that isolation and what all the hatred is building up, and they can finally convince themselves to do it.
Right.
Good point, Scott, and thanks for the call. We really appreciate sparking the conversation. What do you say on that, John? Then we got to kind of shift gears here a little bit.
Yeah, you know, briefly, I think Scott brings up interesting points, and you do too, Kathy. This is complicated. These discussions are really, really important because we don't know what the answers are. I often find myself turning to young people. I think about what those Parkland students did in the wake of that shooting within hours, right, of the most significant trauma any of us can even picture. They were taking microphones and talking about kindness and, you know, reaching out to that student who's sitting alone in the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. So there's something fundamental and simple but not easy about what I think part of the solution is, you know, kind of finding the person who's just alone and connecting with that person.
I think a lot of it is grace. Is we all as a society need to extend one another grace. We can disagree with each other all day long. Politics, Trump, Obama, you know, your politicians, those debates are going to go on forever. We can show each other grace even if we disagree.
It's a great
compassion.
Word.
Compassion is everything.
It is.
I think, and it's really hard, and when something like this happens, so tragic on such a huge level, and it's you know, blasted in the media everywhere, you just get angry right away. Like, who did that? Why did they do that? Who's behind it?
Right.
You know, and some people are texting and saying crazy is just crazy. You know, like, just crazy is crazy. You know,
right.
And I know from a psychologist standpoint, you're like, no, crazy stems from somewhere, and it's usually from their parents and back then. But anyway, you know, and speaking of this topic and transitioning into our next one, you know, when it comes to kids and having difficult conversations like this one, talking about death, talking about major events in life and events like, you know, even your first sexual encounter. You know, today's the day you got
with our kids.
With
talking
our kids,
about that.
Yeah, I know you got experience with that.
I know I have a 17-year-old daughter, and I.
Yeah, so I mean, I want to kind of get into this, John. I do want to get into this deeply. You know, in these conversations, the tough conversations.
Yeah.
You know, and you do this all day long with not only your kids, but you see tons of kids.
Yeah.
In your practice. Yes. So we're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna talk about sex and children, not like that, but talking to your kids about sex, all right? We'll be right back.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk
all right.
About
it's time for that awkward conversation, everybody.
Here we go.
Get your kids around the table. Turn up the radio. Dr. Duffy's session is in motion. All right, Doc. My kids are too young to have this conversation, or maybe not, but... Kathy, you, on the other hand, have some teenage children, or one teen, or two.
I have a soon-to-be 11-year-old, so I think that is a perfect time, isn't it?
It actually is. And I would argue it might even be a year too late. Not that you're late.
No.
There's always a good time to join that conversation.
I did do something that I did with my older kids, my teenagers now, 17 and 18. I found this book at Barnes & Noble, and it was like a cartoon version of The Sex Talk. But it was very graphic, the cartoon. And so
with humans or cartoons?
Humans, like mom and dad on top of each other and explaining what this is and how babies are made. And so, because I get so awkward with this, I just read the book.
No pictures? No
okay, your nighttime book tonight. Yeah, I mean, there were pictures, and then he read it. And my 17-year-old daughter still talks about it. She goes, oh my God, I remember that book you got out. I'm like, I didn't know how to tell you.
So did she ask, like, mom, like, what's intercourse? Like, did she ask you those questions, or are they just so embarrassed they don't even do it?
No, because they were too awkward and uncomfortable. But at the end, I said, if you have any questions, just ask me and I'll tell you, or just look it up online.
John, what is the right age? Because, I mean, I feel like, you know, you hear stories of kids having sex younger and younger.
Yeah.
And when I say kids, I mean teenagers.
Yeah.
What's the average age that you're hearing?
So the average age of when kids start having sex?
Today, in this
world. Kids talk about hooking up. And if we had 20 kids in the room and we asked them, what does hooking up mean? You're going to get 20 different answers. So the average age for hooking up is anywhere between about 13, Jesus, maybe 12, up to maybe 15 or 16.
But my daughter is not leaving the effing house. Period. She's not.
And this awkwardness, so it's so interesting. We've talked about some really tough topics already since I've been in here today. When we started talking about sex, you guys both made the queasy face.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is because this is the worst talk this is the most repellent topic, I think, for parents. And it's icky.
As I think about this and listen to you, I have less weirdness about talking to my son about this than I do my daughter. Like my son, I'm like, you know, just wear a condom, you know, like, and be nice to girls and don't treat them wrong.
Right.
You know, like, that's the daughter, though, is like, I want to kill somebody.
Is it just one of those things where the wife should talk to the daughter and the husband should talk to the son?
By and large, I think that same gender talk is easier, at least to start with.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing about the sex talk. A generation ago, that used to be like a one and done. I'm gonna bite the bullet, do this thing, 10 minutes, maybe five, and I'm done. You know what I mean? I am done.
Get it over with.
Never gonna do it again.
I read the book to you. If you have questions, go read that book again.
Now, kids are exposed to sex at really, really early, early ages. You think about the devices the kids are looking at. We don't even know what they're looking at half the time. But, you know, if they're watching.
You do know, John. You do know.
But you know there's sex out there. Even for an 8-year-old, they know what sex is, what different sex acts are. And that is horrifying, but that is a reality.
From video games, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it.
Yeah, there isn't much media that's immune to sex.
I agree. We got Bill on the line. He's got a funny story about sex talk. Hey, Bill.
How you doing, guys? Love your show.
Thanks, buddy.
So now I'm 18 years old, right? I'm working on a car in the garage with my dad. 18. So I had been seeing a girl, lives down a block, girl I went to school with. So my dad just very bluntly looks at me and he says, hey, I got to ask you something. I said, what's up? He goes, are you shacking up with that girl? I'm like, and I said, well, yeah, basically. He's like, you know what I mean? I said, yeah. He goes, well, are you using rubbers? He just came out like that. Rubbers. And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, good. We're done. And that was my sex talk with my dad.
Awesome. At 18, no less.
So, it was brief. It was to the point. And it was, I look back on it, and it was so funny. You know, here's this grown man, and he couldn't talk to me about it until then. But it was, I just thought that was funny.
But, you know, in his mind, he's like, I did it.
Yeah.
Like, man, I did it. That's great.
And he had to wait till we were doing something manly, like working on the car,
of course.
Right.
Awesome story, Bill. Thanks for chiming in. I appreciate it.
Dr. John, I'm guessing 18 is a little too old.
Yeah, as you can tell from the caller, the ship has sailed already, right?
Yes.
You know, he's asking in the past tense, are you using rubbers, right? He's not asking now. And so, 18, and again, that was a different time, I'm assuming. Now we have to talk to our kids It has to be an ongoing, open discussion. The openings tend to be, in my mind, the pause button. If you hit the pause button, you're watching Friends. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you're watching. Within 15 minutes of anything you watch with your kid or anything you listen to with your kid, you're going to have a moment where sex shows up. And to hit that pause button and be a little meta about it and say, we're going to have 2 minutes of awkward conversation about sex right now. Uh-huh. And make it brief and be really clear, like, I don't want to do this any more than you do. We're going to do this. This is how I raised my son, by the way. And
what age was that? Because Luca's 7.
So I would say maybe 9 or 10 is the time to start that. But you want to be age appropriate in the way you talk about sex, right?
Sure.
So,
mm-hmm.
Kathy, you were judicious in recognizing, ooh, the visuals in the book aren't going to work for my kids. This is a little too much for me and them. I'm going to read.
It's too much for her. I don't know about the kids.
I'm like, ew.
Yeah, so you can spare yourself some of the ew by being cryptic at first. You know what I mean? Like, this is where two people who care about each other get together. You can start, you know, being vague like that when your kids are young.
Mm-hmm.
But the stork talk, that's done. You know, your kids are already beyond that no matter how old they are.
Yes.
And you have to, you
that
can't
story
have your
never made sense anyway.
No, nobody ever bought it.
So how do you talk to them about what they're seeing in social media and on TV and everything? I almost said magazines, like kid read magazines. Anywhere, wherever they're getting it, how do you talk to them about what you're seeing is not real? And even with I'm sure kids are being exposed to porn, whether inadvertently, however they're exposed to it, how do you talk to them about that not being real?
Well, just to be clear, most kids are exposed to porn overtly and frequently.
Porn's not real?
We'll get to this, Frank.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's a whole other topic.
But the way to talk about this is to draw your kids out first, is to ask them questions about their experience, what's going on in your grade, what are your peers like, what are you seeing, what are you watching. And sometimes kids are going to, the wisdom that kids offer, they're not that uncomfortable with this. Once you start talking about it, mm-hmm. we're way more uncomfortable than kids are.
That's true.
And so if you can get them talking about it, usually they'll start working it through on their own. The thing is just to get the conversation started. You want to be a safe space for them to open up and talk about it, mm-hmm. you know? And you want to lend your opinion. I think you're too young to engage in any of this. What happens on these sets for porn movies, this isn't real. This isn't what sex is really like or what it's really about mm-hmm. or what it's meant for. It's important to say all those things, but drawing them out goes way further than the lecture does.
I just read an article on this topic, and they were saying how the young girls are now aspiring to act like these porn stars. And if the guys don't get that from them, they don't want to hang with them.
Right. There's a film out called Eighth Grade right now.
Oh, yeah.
It is a beautiful movie that is very hard to watch, that illustrates that point really, really clearly, this kind of pressure to be hypersexualized at a very young age.
It's crazy stuff. John, how can people get a hold of you? And, I mean, obviously they can hear you pretty much weekly now on Bill and Wendy.
Yeah.
What's your website and social?
So my website's drjohnduffy.com. I'm Dr. John Duffy on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
You know, you live in my neighborhood, and I'm going to bring my kids to talk about sex. I'm going to be like, John, hey, come on, let's have some drinks.
Frank's
and I'll show up with my two kids.
Yeah. And then run.
Yeah, I'll have a six-pack and my kids, and I'll just leave. There you go. Anyway, John, thanks. It's always a pleasure having you on, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break, and we come back. We're talking about an aphrodisiac.
Ooh, yeah.
And one that you love.
Love, love it. Mm.
I'll just leave it at that. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah. Welcome back, folks. We're here. Breaking Kathy.
Yeah.
Holding down.
Talking chocolate.
Talking chocolate.
Mm.
Sexual chocolate.
Well, sexual chocolate.
No, we just finished the sex part. Now it's the chocolate part. Joining us on the phone, we have Master Chef. From Fannie Mae,
mm-hmm.
the one and only Elliot Callahan.
Hello, Master Chef.
Hey there, Frank.
Elliot Callahan.
Hi,
Kathy. Hi. So I have a quick question. Are you a Master Chef at cooking all things chocolate or just a Master Chef in general?
So my title is Master Chocolatier. And my role at Fannie Mae is really just to focus on chocolate and be the in-house expert on chocolate, and I work on developing new recipes.
How'd you get that job? That's awesome.
She's drooling over here, just so you know.
Well, I started my career as a pastry chef, And I went to culinary school, and I studied pastry and baking arts. And I spent the first part of my career as a hotel pastry chef, which involves a lot of chocolate. After that, I did some teaching. I worked as a chef instructor for a few years, and then Fannie Mae recruited me because they were looking for a chocolatier.
How does that work when they go out recruiting chocolate master or master pastry chefs? I mean, is it a rigorous trial, or how do they gauge like you're the right guy? Or they've been scouting you like the NFL, right?
I don't think it's quite as fantastic as that. I was in the area, and I had the right skill set. They were really looking for somebody who had a kind of a culinary background. And at the time, the position was for a managing production. And so I did the management of the production for a couple of years, and then sort of that evolved into the master chocolatier position.
So how often do you actually cook chocolate, bake chocolate?
Melt chocolate.
Chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, almost every day I'm in the kitchen for a little while, making samples or experimenting on a new recipe or, testing out new ingredients. I mean, it can be so many different things.
Are you a light chocolate guy or a dark chocolate guy? Or can you not say that?
Or milk chocolate.
Right. So, the great thing about chocolate is, there's so many different styles of chocolate, whether you're talking about chocolate that's made in America or European chocolate, chocolate that's made with beans from a particular origin. So, in the same way that we kind of think about coffee these days as having many different styles and many different origins, chocolate is just like that. So, depending on the time of the day, the time of the year, what you're pairing that chocolate with, there can be a lot of different factors that that go into, what's the best chocolate for that application.
How about you, Kath? Are you a dark or milk chocolate?
I'm dark because I'm trying to avoid dairy, not intentionally because I love cheese, and don't get me started on that subject. But I've adjusted to dark chocolate. But what do they say is the percentage of cocoa where dark chocolate is healthy and actually good for you?
Good question.
Yeah, I think the rule of thumb these days is that a chocolate that has a 70% cacao content
is
where you might really start to see the benefits of the antioxidants that are in chocolate. But I'm not a researcher, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not making that any health claims, but that's the sort of...
About 70%.
But you mentioned coffee and chocolate in the same sentence before, and I always believe that those are the two staple things in our society that are so prevalent, and everybody, I know, like, Sherry just went shopping this morning, she got two healthy dark chocolate bars, because we love chocolate. Every day after dinner, we have a little piece of chocolate, we break a little piece off, and that's our dessert.
I just got something where they put chocolate on potato chips. Oh,
you like that?
The salty? Salt, sweet and salty? Yeah. Do you make stuff like that, too?
Yeah, sure, we do, and I think the American palate is definitely trending towards a more sweet salty mix. So I think that's a trend that's actually, going to be here for a while. But getting back to the coffee and chocolate thing, one of the similarities is that they both contain caffeine. So which is just, an amazing chemical.
Hey, how much caffeine content is in chocolate?
A lot less than coffee. Probably about half as much, depending on what kind of sizes you're talking about. But chocolate also contains another compound called theobromine, which is from the Greek word food of the gods, and that's the other compound that's similar to caffeine, but gives us that sense of well-being when we eat chocolate.
Yeah, because don't some people say that they have an addiction to chocolate, and there is something to that, the science behind the brain actually craving this chocolate and wanting it?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that that plays a factor in it, for sure, you know. I mean, but also it's just a delicious food.
Yes,
and it's sweet as well. So, you know, I mean, it triggers a lot of appetites in the body and mind.
Kathy just revealed the secret of how Fannie Mae stayed in business so long. It's that addictive quality.
Yeah. It's addictive. My sister is completely addicted to chocolate.
So what does Fannie Mae have coming up in the holiday season? Are they preparing any big rollouts?
Well, right now, our seasonal item is the Pumpkin Pie Spice Pixie.
Mm. What's a
which
spice
we introduced
pixie?
Last. Yeah, so the Pixie, of course, is... you know, Fannie Mae's signature confection. It's our most popular confection, and it's caramel on a bed of pecans coated with milk chocolate, although we also make one with dark chocolate, but the standard is with milk chocolate. And for the pumpkin spice pixie, of course, we added a little bit of pumpkin pie spice, and we tweaked the recipe a little bit, added a little hint of molasses in the caramel, and it's just a fantastic flavor combination.
That Kathy, sounds delicious.
Kathy just quivered when you said caramel and pecans.
Mm. And what the hell is nougat?
Nougat.
What is nougat?
What's nougat?
Yeah, nougat is basically sort of in the same family as marshmallow, but it contains a lot more sugar than marshmallow does. So
no wonder I like it.
Firmer. Yeah.
Nougat.
Actually, it's an ancient confection. It goes back to like Roman times when it was made with honey and lots of nuts. Yeah.
Nougat?
So the Italian. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of these confections go back, you know, many, many years. So there's a lot of history there.
This is good, fascinating candy
nougats.
Information.
Yeah, nougats. I just want to go eat some.
Where do we get more information about Fannie Mae and all the fun stuff you guys got going on?
Well, I would say head to our website. It would be a good start. You know, also you can visit us on Instagram as well.
Oh,
sweet.
Fantastic.
See some cool chocolate shots.
Mm-hmm. Especially with stuff coming up for the holidays. Not only with Halloween on Wednesday, but the holidays coming up. Before we know it.
Good stuff, Chef. Appreciate it. Elliot Callahan joining us from Fannie Mae. Thanks so much, man. Keep that chocolate churning, buddy.
Mm.
Can't wait to taste.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bud. Take care. Coming up after this break, Kath, I stumbled on a story that I think you're going to like.
What is it?
It's about alcohol.
Oh, okay. You had me at alcohol.
We're done there. We'll be right back.
Well, I got to get drunk, and I sure do dread it, because I know just what I'm going to do.
Back to the Frank and Kathy Show on WGN Radio. Hey, guys.
Hello, US 99.
That's it. We're rounding home, Kathy. We're going to be out here at 3. The Bears winning, Tom?
I know. We haven't had a chance to
talk Bears at all.
Yeah, they are winning right now. Hold on. They're just
Well, that doesn't mean much lately.
I haven't heard Camp or B screaming in the...
It's 24-10.
Oh,
they're to winning. To the Bears.
Wow, good stuff.
Should be able to pull this out.
Oh,
let's hope.
A lot of people drinking at that game, I bet.
No, that does not happen, Frank.
No, but here, you're going to love this. I found this study the other day, and I thought of you instantly.
Awesome.
Alcohol helps you remember the good times and not the bad ones, studies say.
Oh.
Is that new news?
When we make any recollection of past experiences, we think of the good ones? Because we were drinking alcohol?
Well, like, you know, you're in a crappy mood and you had a bad day and you're like, I'm going to go get a beer at my friends and then, you know, a couple of beers and you're feeling great and then you're like, forget about your problems. You know what you say? You know, alcohol, people drown their problems in alcohol.
Yes.
Well, it's actually scientifically proven that it's true and there's a positive effect to it.
Good.
So this study says just one glass of wine could be enough for you to dismiss all your bad memories and focus on only the good times. Researchers say alcohol hijacks the pathway that forms memory on a fundamental molecular level.
Oh.
A new study suggests that alcohol hijacks this pathway and only allows us to remember the good memories and forget the bad ones.
Just one glass of wine? What about four?
Well, no, I think, you know, getting drunk, maybe.
Then you forget everything, the good and the bad.
Senior author Dr. Carla Cohn, an assistant professor of neuroscience at Brown University, told Daily Mail Online that she has been interested in why drugs of abuse, be it alcohol or opiates, produce rewarding memories despite being neurotoxins. They produce side effects like hangovers and nausea, but we consider them rewarding, she said.
Hangovers rewarding?
Don't you like that feeling sometimes?
No,
like the next day,
never.
Not like super hungover, but like you're hungover enough where you're like, man, I had a good time last night, and I'm enjoying sitting here doing nothing and vegging because I'm just out of it a little
bit. I guess if you're not that hungover and it's like, oh man, last night was awesome, and then you do recall the good times.
So this, I don't know how we could how they equate this, but they're scientists. For the study, the team used fruit flies because they're attracted to alcohol, and the molecular signals from their memories of reward and avoidance are similar to humans. Who would have known?
I've heard that you can when you have a lot of fruit flies in your house and you want to get rid of them, you put a glass of wine out,
right,
piece of saran wrap over the top of it with toothpick holes in it, and then they'll go into the wine. And
forget all their problems.
Exactly. What a way to go.
Do you feel... Right. Exactly. Get drunk, die.
What a way to go.
All kidding aside, do you feel this? Like, do you, when you, you know, are struggling with stuff and you're like, oh, I just need to have a drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the most classic line you hear in everything. I just need to have a drink.
For sure. So many people do it.
But the science here is that it actually does work, and it actually does make you forget that bad time.
It helps. Okay, good. Well, then that's my excuse for why I do it.
Right. I'm saying, I think a lot of people listening right now, I mean, we're not promoting alcoholism here by any means.
No, well, you have to be careful.
You got to be careful. You got to be safe. But,
moderation.
You know, listen, people take Xanax. People, you know, do medical marijuana, whatever it is. And
are you a happy drunk?
Me?
Are you a sad drunk?
No, I'm a fun drunk.
Are you?
I get fun.
What's the last time that you got drunk? Do you recall? What did you do that was fun?
Sherry, my wife, would beg to differ.
Do you remember?
She pushes me to try to get drunk.
She does?
So there's drunk for me and drunk. Drunk for me is like two tequilas on the rocks, and I'm good. Like, I'm good.
And that's it.
But like straight double shot tequilas on the rocks.
Whoa.
Like clean, nothing else in it. And then I'm, you know, I like the music and fun and stuff. But 3 to 4, it goes downhill quick.
And then what happens? Do you just like shut down? You don't talk?
Yeah, I'm not like a rude drunk. I don't get mean or angry. I just like, oh, I don't feel good.
Oh.
Like, I go from feeling amazing to like, I feel like crap.
Are you like all lovey, like, oh, yeah, we're having a good time? Like that kind
totally.
Of
totally.
Happy?
Like, yeah. Like yeah. Like that 70s show where they're sitting around in the big cloud of smoke. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like that. I get like put on some like good 70s classic rock and just sit there and like, yeah,
I like hanging around with, yeah, definitely the happy drunks.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much for me lately. It's just, I'm like the cheap date. Usually one drink and I start to catch a buzz. It's sad.
Wine?
It's so sad.
Is that your go-to?
Wine, yeah, but I did find a wine that is low alcohol and it's, I know why, right? A lot of people are like, what? Why? But if you do want to have a couple of glasses of wine without getting a real buzz, it's a low alcohol wine. It has low sulfites. You don't have the hangover.
Sure.
And I wish I could remember their tagline or slugline or whatever it is, but it's basically you can drink more and just have the happy benefits of being drunk without feeling like crap.
Yeah.
That's not exactly the slugline how it goes, but I'll have to remember it. And yeah, so I can drink more.
Would you take the study as... medicinal? Would you say that this is something that you would...
Yes, I will, Frank.
Yes, I will.
I'm drinking wine because it's medicinal.
Tom, what say you on this topic? You're a young lad.
A young lad. Oh, man.
Do you drink alcohol?
Oh, drinking it right now. No, I do. And it makes sense that it only makes you remember the good stuff. You know, we always want to remember the happy times. But you just got to ask yourself that question. Is that how you really want to go through life?
You what, know, remembering
like
just
only
the, good
remember the good stuff? Because I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, yeah, I get it, I get it.
Right?
But I think it was the college dean in Animal House that once said, "Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son." So I try to avoid that.
Okay.
Words to live by from Animal House.
Nice, yes. Words to live by.
Yeah, yeah. Some people go to church. He watches old frat movies.
Whatever works.
I like it.
But it's fine to drink. I mean, I'm a advocate of going out and having beers or drinks and stuff because it is a social way to hang out with people.
But here's the flip side of that, Tom. Is people are going to be like, you're just avoiding your problems. It's just a Band-Aid.
You'll know when you're avoiding your problems by drinking. I would say most people aren't. Like, but you'll know when someone definitely is because they will just be a sad drunk.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It'll bring them back.
You start crying about their problems.
See, to me, that's never happened. Like, I never, even if I'm in a bad mood, I've never drank and gotten worse.
It's I hit a point where I start to, I'm usually happy, 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 and then I either run out of energy or I become the sad drunk, because there was one time I went to, I just needed to like stop talking and get it, probably like people are saying right now, and I needed to get away from everybody. So where do you go? You go to the bathroom. So I go to the bathroom, and I'm sitting there. 45 minutes later, my friend came to get me, and she's like, Kathy, are you okay? I'm like, yes. I just want to be by myself for a while.
Were you curled up on the floor of the toilet?
No, I was sitting on the toilet for 45 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was in my 20s.
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't like last week?
No, it wasn't.
All right, anyway. Hamp, OB, and Kaz are going to be coming up, and they're going to be probably in a decent mood. What a concept.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Although I love them when they're
angry.
Fingers
crossed.
Hi.
Hi.
We're back and we're done.
How is it 3 o'clock already?
It's it's time for Hamp, OB, and Kaz to come on and talk about them Bears.
A Bears win.
Hey, the Bears 24-10 in the fourth.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Hey, you're here next week too, yeah?
Or am no? I? We'll find out.
All right. Stay tuned.